Eddie, the Collegiate Junior. Copyright 2020 by Dr. Robert E. Z. Chapter 1. School Starts, Part 1. With Mr. Crum now in jail, sports teams at the high school have had a respite from the turmoil of previous years. The position of principal at the high school is still open, and Mr. Shapiro is very hopeful that the job will soon be his. With the lack of his gambling income, Mr. Bryan has sold his house and moved to a much smaller house on 4th Street, on the other side of the railroad tracks from Eddie's and Mark's storage yards. Mr. Harrison has sold his De Tomaso Pantera, moved into a small apartment, and is not very happy. Mr. Zunday has removed Mr. Ryan from his position as baseball coach. Three teachers have quickly stepped up and applied for Mr. Ryan's former position. Mr. Ryan has complained to the school board, but, for some strange reason, his complaint has fallen on deaf ears. The reason could very well be that Dr. Noreen Brooks, the superintendent of schools, is Mr. Zunday's cousin, and is not open to addressing the issue. Dean Grimsby is out on bail and awaiting trial. His absence has made life at the university more peaceful for everyone, especially Eddie. Dr. Paxton still has not been found, and probably never will be. Todd McCutcheon is gone from the university for good. He has applied to another university in the division, choosing the school with the worst track team on record. Perhaps being a big fish in a small pond is the only way McCutcheon can rise to being the track star that he always wanted to be. Mark would argue that McCutcheon is a puny fish in an ocean of sharks. But McCutcheon will still have to compete against the other teams in the division. That simply means that he will still lose. Last year's awesome track season has Mr. Fraser confident that the university's track team will again dominate the division. Dr. Bonamo, coaching the field events, now shares Mr. Fraser's confidence and enthusiasm. And Provost Layton is on the top of the world, once again being part of the sport she loves so dearly. As the academic year begins at the university, everyone looks forward to their best year yet on the track. On the first official day of track practice for this academic year, the university's team meets in the indoor arena. With a strong showing at both divisional meets last year, the team is really looking forward to the upcoming track season. Already very well prepared for this year's first meet, the team has a few new additions bound to make the team stronger than last year. Among them, sitting with the tribe on the bleachers, is Eddie's brother, John. Following in the family tradition, John held the title of the fastest high school athlete in the country last year. Mr. Fraser walks into the arena, joined by Dr. Bonamo, Provost Layton, Kathy, and Paula. Silently looking over the talent he has to work with this year, Mr. Fraser shuffles a few papers on a small lectern before he begins this year's introductory speech. Many of the freshmen have heard of Mr. Fraser and of his coaching staff, for they are the very reason they now attend the university. Silence falls over the arena as Mr. Fraser prepares to address this year's team for the first time. Mr. Fraser begins his address, "Good morning. As all of you know, or maybe don't know, I am George Fraser. I am one of the coaches of this university's track team." Mr. Fraser is the team's head coach, but he sees himself as no more important than the other coaches. Mr. Fraser continues, "Standing next to me on my left is Dr. Bonamo, who is our field events coach. Standing to my right is Coach Layton, who will be working with the track athletes throughout the year. And standing to the right of Coach Layton is Kathy, who many of you already know. Next to Kathy is Paula. Kathy and Paula ran for this team for the last 4 years. This year, they will be part of our coaching staff." The team cheers, making all the coaches feel welcome. Mr. Fraser begins with some news, stating, "All of you previously ran on a track measured in yards or miles. Starting this year, all events in the division will be run on a metric standard track. There will no longer be a 100-yard dash, which has been replaced by the 100-meter dash. In most meets, there will be no more 1-mile run, which has been replaced by the 1,500-meter run. For those of you who don't understand the metric system, you will understand it well by the time the official season starts. 1 mile, by the way, is about 1,609 meters. So, the 1,500-meter run is 109 meters short of a mile. Mr. Fraser looks over at Mark and is reminded of something that Mark informed him of earlier. Mr. Fraser asks the team, by a show of hands, how many of you ran for Centerville High School? Only one person raises their hand. Mr. Fraser then asks, by a show of hands, how many of you ran against Centerville High School on the track? In contrast, a few athletes raise their hand. Mark sits back on the bleachers, smiling, knowing exactly what is about to come. Mr. Fraser reports to his team, I am informed, by a very reliable source, that the track over at Centerville was grossly out of calibration until it was recently recalibrated to the metric standard. On the Centerville track, before the recalibration, lane 1 was 2.5 yards short of 440 yards. And the engravings on the curb denoting where the blocks are to be placed in a staggered start were way off. Lane 6 is reported to me to be 448 yards. You would have had roughly a 10.5 yard advantage over the runner in lane 6 if you were running in lane 1. If you ever ran on the Centerville High School track, you were running in a rigged race. Mr. Fraser pauses for a moment, then tells the group of athletes, let me quote another Bible verse to you. This verse comes from the book of 2 Timothy, chapter 2, verse 5. The verse reads, also, if anyone competes as an athlete, he does not win the prize unless he competes according to the rules. Did you hear that? Anyone who does not compete according to the rules is disqualified. Step out of your lane, and you are disqualified. Interfere with another runner on the track, and you are disqualified. Hand off outside the transition zone, and you are disqualified. Now, I don't know what is going to happen to the Centerville High School team, but the usual remediation is to sanction the team for a period of time, which means they cannot compete at the state level. The ex-Centerville athlete rudely interrupts Mr. Fraser's presentation and asks, how did you find this out? Not wanting to bring Mark into the discussion, Mr. Fraser explains, one of the former athletes from my high school team is now a landscape architect, specializing in the installation of sporting venues. His name is Louis Zeno. Some of you may know him. Louis has obtained contracts to convert several tracks in the region to the metric standard. The surveyors found gross variations in the length of each lane of the Centerville track. But the good news is that I hear that the sprinting track, where the 100-yard dash was held, was accurate. Looking over at the athlete who interrupted Mr. Fraser's presentation, Mark whispers to Eddie, that guy looks familiar. Overhearing Mark's whisper, Braden whispers to Mark, that's McCrutchen Jr.'s ass sitting over there. 2 years ago, during the state meet, his puny ass was supposed to be on the track, but his brother, McCrutchen, took his place. We busted their asses. Mark whispers, what's he doing here? Eddie whispers to Mark, he came to get his ass kicked. Braden whispers, that's all he's gonna do is get his ass kicked. And I'm gonna be the one to kick it. Jeff McCutcheon, the youngest of the McCutcheon family, is a walk-on and will be trying out for a place on the team. Jeff was accepted to the university and, after making his decision, learned about the gambling ring being busted wide open. There is no doubt the youngest of the McCutcheon brothers was planning to continue the family tradition of fixing events. During Mr. Fraser's address, Braden whispers to the tribe, and Delaney's ass is back again too. He's sitting right next to McCrutchen Jr. Eddie whispers to Braden, I wonder if he knows how to pick locks. Braden whispers back, looking at these guys, now I'm glad you gave me that pick-proof lock. Mark reminds everyone, if I remember correctly, we were going to get rid of Delaney. Eddie suggests, we can start today. Mark mentions, I need to find out what kind of shampoo he uses. Mark's plan is to buy a bottle of Delaney's brand of shampoo, mix a depilatory in with it, and swap it with Delaney's bottle when Delaney is not looking. Delaney will then slowly go bald over a week or two, just like McCutcheon did. Catching the tribe's immediate attention, Mr. Fraser, addressing an important topic, announces, "I've heard that a few members and former members of this team have been arrested for the possession of drugs, specifically marijuana." Mr. Fraser loudly exclaims, "What part of smoking dope is in your training protocol?" Silence suddenly falls over the arena. Following a brief pause, Mr. Fraser tells the team, "That's what I thought. Now, listen up. If anyone on this team is involved in using illegal drugs of any type, you will be cut, and I will personally see to it that your scholarship is revoked. I don't care who you are. And I don't care who your father is. I sincerely hope this is the last time I have to address this topic." Mr. Fraser's announcement regarding drug use was specifically directed at McCutcheon and Delaney. Mr. Fraser continues with his introductory address. "Now, we're going to get down to business and start with the basics. There are only two events that are run in track. Those two races are the 100-meter dash and the 400-meter dash." As expected, some chatter is heard among the athletes, such as, "He's crazy," or, "What is he talking about?" Mr. Fraser explains, "The 200-meter dash is nothing more than a prolonged 100-meter dash. The 60-meter dash is nothing more than a short 100-meter dash. The strategy is the same, which is to run as fast as you possibly can. If you can run one of those races, you can run the others." The tribe, having heard Mr. Fraser's energetically charged introductory address many times before, sits back and relaxes as Mr. Fraser reiterates much of his speech from last year. Looking around the bleachers, Braden notices Delaney and Jeff McCutcheon whispering back and forth. John Bogenskaya, new to the team this year, realizes a new level of energy in Mr. Fraser's address. Joe Sepulveda, a high jumper who is also good at the long jump and triple jump, also joins the team this year. Lucius Hill, also new to the team, can't wait to get on the track. And with Daryl Stone having graduated, Tom Davidson, a strong distance runner, will likely be running the 1,500-meter and 800-meter events along with Mitchell and Akinmola. Stone, by special arrangement, will be working out with the team this year as he is training for the Olympics. Once Mr. Fraser is finished with his 15-minute introductory address, he announces, "We will now run a few time trials. But first, all of the freshmen will meet with Kathy and Paula on the sprinting track. Kathy and Paula will help you to determine your optimal block settings. Do not assume the block settings you were using in high school were correct. They probably weren't. As for everyone else, you will be running a 400-meter dash for time. And for you freshmen, don't think you're getting off easy. You will be running the 400-meter dash once your optimal block settings have been determined." Giving the team instruction on how the time trial will proceed, Mr. Fraser announces, "Coach Layton and myself have prearranged the heats for the 400-meter dash." Holding up a piece of paper with the assignments, Mr. Fraser continues, "Your heat assignments are listed on this paper. I will leave the list on the lectern. Please check the list and make sure you are warmed up and ready to run when your heat is called. Once your heat is over, please take a seat on the bleachers. Okay. Everyone, get up and warm up." The upperclassmen warm up as the freshmen meet with Kathy and Paula on the sprinting track. Once the runners are warmed up, Mr. Fraser announces, "Braden, take lane 1. Eddie, lane 2. Mark, lane 3. Johnson, lane 4. Hoffer, lane 5. Hill, lane 6. Stone, lane 7. And Delaney, lane 8. Braden exclaims, "Here we go. This year's us kicking season is about to begin." Approaching the blocks, Mark whispers to Eddie, "Why did he put Delaney in this heat?" Eddie whispers back, so he can get his ass kicked, and show him how bad he really is. Hearing Eddie and Mark's whispering, Brayden chimes in, adding, this is step one of getting rid of his ass. The first heat gets behind the blocks, ready to show the freshmen how it's done. Except for, perhaps, Lucius Hill, a freshman, who is in the first heat. Hill was previously coached by Mr. Fraser. He was granted an exception for determining his block settings. For the state's high school gold medalist in the 400 and 40-yard dash knows his block settings very well. So does Eddie's brother, John, who is standing among the upperclassmen. The starter announces, on your marks, followed by, set. The buzzer sounds, signaling the start of this year's preparation for the track season and the race. Halfway through the first lap of the two-lap race, Mr. Fraser exclaims, these guys are fast. They are clocking. Can you believe it? At 200 meters, Eddie, Mark, and Brayden are head-to-head. Halfway through the last lap, Kathy exclaims, Ed is going to beat Brayden. With all eyes on the finish, Eddie and Brayden come around the curve, fighting it out for the title of the fastest man in this heat. At the finish line, Eddie edges out Brayden by slightly less than a meter, surprising not only the veterans on the team, but the coaches as well. Looking up at the newly installed electronic timer on the wall, Eddie sees his time of 44.71 seconds as he walks off his run. Pointing to the scoreboard, Mr. Fraser exclaims, did everybody see that? These guys are fast. Look at those times. Provost Layton, who heard from Mr. Fraser that Eddie could probably beat Brayden in the 400 and 40-yard dash, can hardly believe what just transpired. The freshmen quickly realize that the bar is set very high in collegiate competition, and a 400-meter run in the lower 50-second range simply won't cut it. Kathy gives Paula a high five, knowing that the guys are still highly competitive. Knowing that he was beat, Brayden is eerily silent. With no boasting, no ranting, and no chanting, Brayden takes a cool-down jog around the track alone, wondering whether he had a bad run or Eddie had an unusually good run. Looking up at the scoreboard again, Brayden knows he will either have to step up his game or give up his title of chief as kicker. The latter is not one of Brayden's options. Receiving a high five from everyone he passes, Eddie heads toward the bleachers and takes a seat. Sitting back relaxing as the second heat is underway, Eddie watches Kathy as she shows the freshmen how to set the blocks. Eddie thinks back to the summer when he rode his bicycle to work on most days instead of driving. Taking a longer route home every day than was necessary, Eddie now is confident that all the extra training he put in was worth it. So was the occasional 15 or 30-minute stop off at the high school on his way home to practice his sprints. The frequent trips to the sand track in the afternoons using the training sled along with Kathy and Karen appears to have paid off. And the laps he swam in the pool in the evenings were the icing on the cake. Karen now stands behind the blocks, up against Erica, Tessa, and a few other star sprinters from last year. When Kathy and Karen took the 80-mile trip to Karen's house to get her bicycle, they talked about training on the way. After their discussion, Karen, too, rode her bicycle to work over the summer when the weather permitted. When Karen got home from work, she, Kathy, and Eddie would ride their bicycles to the university's track and train. With Karen using Eddie's training protocols, Eddie is curious to see how Karen does in the 400-meter dash. The buzzer sounds, followed by several primal screams announcing the girl fight has begun. At the 100-meter mark, as expected, Erica is in the lead, but not by much. Karen, right on Erica's heels, is in second place, with Tessa very unhappy in third place. Coming around the second curve, Karen effortlessly passes Erica, surprising both Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton. Entering the final lap, Karen has gained a substantial lead. Kathy, and the group of freshmen she is helping with the blocks, stops and watches as the end of the 400-meter race draws near. Coming out of the final curve, Erica and Tessa are nearly tied as they approach the finish line. At the finish line, Erica beats out Tessa by less than 1 meter, but it doesn't matter. Karen crossed the finish line 3 seconds before Erica and Tessa. Taking a recovery lap and walking off her run, Karen looks up at the scoreboard and smiles. Her time of 52.3 seconds is far better than she, or anyone else, expected today. Knowing she had to give it her best, Karen went all out. Walking along the back straightaway, Karen smiles as she hears Mr. Fraser exclaiming, "Can anyone believe this? These women are clocking." Passing by Eddie, Karen gives him a high five, then turns around to give a high five to the rest of the women in her heat. Taking a seat together on the bleachers, the women sit and rest as the next heat gets underway. With all the action on the track, little discussion is heard on the bleachers. The team, wanting to know how strong the team as a whole is this year, is just as interested as the coaches to see where everyone stands. Once the upperclass men and women have run, the freshmen take to the track and will be measured against the high standards set by the seasoned veterans. Truth be told, the freshmen, after watching the upperclass run, are very nervous, especially since most of them did not even know how to properly set their starting blocks. The buzzer sounds, and the first heat of freshman men are out of the blocks. Breaking his silence, Braden asks Eddie, "I must be doing something wrong. How did you get faster than me?" With a simple answer, Eddie explains, "I trained all summer." Braden replies, "You must be doing something different. Either that, or I must be doing something wrong." Eddie elaborates, explaining to Braden, "Over the summer, I rode my bicycle to work, except when it rained. On my way home, I took the long way. After work, me and Kathy worked out in our gym for a while. Then, when Karen came home from work, we rode our bicycles to the university and trained on the track. But one of us would drive and bring the training sled so we can work out on the sand track." Braden observes, "Dang. You're making me look like a lazy ass." Eddie informs Braden, "The Olympics are this summer, bro. Think about it." Braden is silent, now seeing a far bigger picture than he did earlier today. As the freshmen approach the finish line, Braden asks Eddie, "So, that's how Karen got so fast?" Eddie replies, "I guess so. It's the bicycle, bro. It's the bicycle." Suspecting that he might have to step up his game, Braden asks, "Do you think riding a bicycle will help me?" Eddie replies, "Yeah, bro. The first thing you need to do is stop sitting on your ass all day long in that police car of yours. Maybe you can convince the chief that, at least for part of the day, you can go on patrol on a bicycle. Then, you can get a workout in during the day. That would make a lot more sense than sitting in your car." Braden exclaims, "We got bicycles down at the station. I'm gonna see if I can do that." Eddie tells Braden, "Yeah, bro. You'll definitely get faster." Braden now has a plan, which is patrolling the campus on a bicycle. Looking up at the scoreboard, Braden mentions, "The freshmen are looking better than I expected." Eddie adds, "Except for McCrutchen Jr. He came in at about 65 seconds. Braden replies, "Yeah. We need to get rid of his puny ass, and that Delaney guy too." Eddie predicts, "They'll just get cut. They are running middle school times. So, if we want to mess with them, we'd better do it soon." Mark cannot help but comment, "We'd better start today." With the time trials over for now, and 30 minutes remaining, Mr. Fraser has the team run the interval drill and get some training in. While the team is on the track, Mr. Fraser mentions to Provost Layton, "It's looking good this year. These guys all look better than last year's team." Provost Layton replies, "I can see that, George. And you were right. Eddie beat Braden in the 400 meter. Mr. Fraser smiles and replies, "I saw that. But I can tell you this. The 400 meter is Braden's race. Braden is not going to stand for it. He'll be training a lot harder now." At the end of practice, Kathy and Paula walk over to join Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton. Mr. Fraser wastes no time asking Kathy, "Has Eddie been training any differently?" Kathy explains, "He sure has. He's been riding his new bicycle a lot more. He's been riding it to work when it's nice out. And me, Eddie, and Karen were hitting the track every day over the summer." Mr. Fraser comments, "Karen beat Erica and Tessa. That was the biggest surprise of the day." Kathy explains, "Karen was riding her bicycle to work over the summer too. And she's been swimming a lot and working out in our gym." Mr. Fraser blows his whistle, and the athletes take a seat on the bleachers. Mr. Fraser announces, "Tomorrow, we will be running a relay drill. For those of you who are new, we will be using a non-visual non-verbal exchange with an upsweep delivery. And the baton never changes hands. The technique will be demonstrated to you tomorrow morning. To be on a relay team, you must perfect this technique. On the following day, we will all be running a 1,500-meter run for time. So, please be prepared." Mr. Fraser blows his whistle again and points to the locker rooms. The athletes hit the lockers, fully understanding the level of competition in the arena today. In the men's locker room, Braden walks by Jeff McCutcheon, looks at him sternly, and asks, "What's your ass doing here, Junior?" Suddenly fearful, McCutcheon replies, "I'm trying out for the team." McCutcheon should have ignored Braden, but he stepped right into Braden's trap. Braden replies, "You ain't gonna make the team anyway, so why don't you just clean out your locker right now and go home?" Stupidly, McCutcheon replies, "Tryouts aren't over yet." Braden informs McCutcheon that don't matter none. "You got your ass kicked out there today." McCutcheon boldly informs Braden, "Well, I run distance. I'm not a sprinter." Braden laughs and replies, "I really wanna see this. I'm gonna get a front row seat so I can see that ass kicking come down." Overhearing the exchange between Braden and McCutcheon, Mitchell, who is usually quiet, asks McCutcheon, "So, you run distance?" McCutcheon proudly responds, "Yeah. I run distance." Mitchell informs McCutcheon, "If you're going to be competitive at distance with this team, you'd better be running a 4-minute mile, or close to it." Brushing Mitchell aside, McCutcheon replies, "You guys can't run a 4-minute mile." Akinmola, who rarely joins in such discussions, tells McCutcheon, "That's right, my friend. We all break 4 minutes now." McCutcheon, who has heard from his brother that some of the guys on the track team mess with heads, figures this is just a case of exactly that. While Braden and Mitchell are distracting McCutcheon, Mark observes that Jeff McCutcheon uses the same brand of shampoo as his brother. Looking into Delaney's locker, Mark makes a note of Delaney's brand of shampoo. Mark tells Eddie, "I need to stop by the store on the way home today and get a few bottles of shampoo." Eddie laughs, knowing exactly what Mark is referring to, and replies, "I can't wait." While the athletes are getting dressed, Provost Layton asks Kathy, "Did I understand correctly that you, Eddie, and Karen were working out together over the summer?" Kathy replies, "Yeah. Karen stayed with us over the summer, and she worked out nearly every day. On some days, Paula and Mark would join us." Provost Layton comments, "It really showed in Karen's and Eddie's performance today." Kathy replies, "I suspected that Karen might beat Erica this year. She's been working really hard. And Erica is not going to be too happy that she got beat." Provost Layton asks, "So, Karen stayed with you and Eddie over the summer?" Kathy explains, "Yeah. They wouldn't let her stay in the dorms because she wasn't taking any classes, so she stayed with us." Provost Layton tells Kathy, "Here's a secret. If someone wants to stay in the dorms over the summer, all they have to do is audit or take a 1-hour class. Then, they are eligible to stay in the dorms over the summer. Even if they drop the class, they still have their dorm room for the rest of the semester." Kathy tells Provost Layton, "Wow. I'll let Karen know that in case she decides to stay around next summer. Kathy then tells Provost Layton, Eddie and Mark don't really want to work with the high school team this year, but they've still been helping Barbara. Barbara was wondering if she can get two other interns for this year. I told her I'd bring it up to you. Provost Layton asks, what's up with Eddie and Mark? Kathy explains, Eddie thinks he might be able to make the Olympics. And now, so does Mark. So, Eddie is training more. Understanding Eddie's concern, Provost Layton tells Kathy, we can certainly find someone for Barbara. The money has already been allocated, so it shouldn't be a problem at all. Kathy suggests, Karen and Amber might want the job. They worked together over the summer at the summer day camp that I used to work at. Knowing that Karen and Amber are among the most skilled women on the team, Provost Layton tells Kathy, I can probably arrange for that. With practice now over, Provost Layton heads to her office. Kathy and Paula start their first day of graduate school. Mark makes a side trip to the grocery store before he heads over to meet Bobby B. at the job site. Mark and Bobby B., trying to meet a tight deadline, are still working on Dr. Akinmola's church building. Eddie, now driving to work since track practice has started, heads over to the service station. And Todd McCutcheon, now running for another university, is nowhere to be found. Unfortunately, his less-than-skilled brother, Jeff, showed up in his place. Eddie arrives at the service station, taking his time as he opens up, thinking back to this morning and the first day of track practice this year. Recalling how good this year's team is, Eddie visualizes yet another winning season. Thinking back over the years, Eddie finds it hard to believe that the tribe is not only still together, but unstoppable on the track. With his mind now back on track and field, Eddie is slow to get into the mood to work. Peering out of the first service bay, Eddie sees the first customer driving in. Eddie, hoping the customer only wants to fill his tank, does not really want to start working yet. As Eddie walks into the office, seeing a significant amount of smoke coming out of the vehicle's exhaust, Eddie realizes he has no such luck. The customer pulls up in front of one of the service bays with an engine that can definitely use some work. Out of the corner of his eye, Eddie sees the customer walk toward the door. Turning around to turn on the radio, Eddie hopes the problem is something simple and, at the same time, knows the problem is a serious one. The customer walks in and announces, "Hey, do you guys work on foreign cars?" Eddie turns around, is quite surprised, and exclaims, "Gump, how have you been?" Eddie walks over, as Gump, whose proper name is Daniel Gaspari, replies, "Great. I'm just headed back to college to start my senior year." Gump asks, "What have you been up to?" Eddie replies, "41, I'm working here. And I'm running track over at the university." Gump asks, "Seriously? Which one?" "The state university a few miles from the high school." Eddie replies, "That's the one." Mark, Braden, Johnson, Bobby B., Mitchell, and a few other guys you might know are also on the team. And, get this, Mr. Fraser is now our coach. Gump exclaims, "No. You're shitting me." Eddie replies, "Bro, I'm as serious as a blown head gasket, which is probably what's wrong with your car." Gump explains, "I was headed back to college this morning, and all this white smoke started coming out of the exhaust." Eddie replies, "I saw that when you drove up. You probably blew a head gasket. The antifreeze is getting into your combustion chambers, which makes white smoke when it burns." Gump asks, "Can you fix it?" Eddie replies, "Yeah, bro. Let's take a look at it. Give me your keys." Eddie, with renewed energy to start working today, drives Gump's car into an empty service bay. As Eddie checks the compression in each of the cylinders, Gump asks, "So, what's been going on around here for the last 3 years?" Eddie replies, asking, "Do you remember Mr. Crumb?" Gump replies, "Yeah." Eddie reveals he's in jail now. Gump exclaims, "What? Seriously? Why?" Eddie explains he was the school drug dealer and he was involved in a gambling ring. He was working with a few of the teachers to fix the outcomes of some of the meets. Not believing what he is hearing, Gump exclaims, "What? Are you serious?" As Gump is cranking the engine for Eddie as he checks the compression, Eddie replies, "Yeah. Serious as no compression in cylinder number 3. Your head gasket is gone. Let me call the auto parts store. They'll have it here in 10 minutes. Gump asks, "That quick?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. They are across the street. But the bad news is we have to wait for your engine to cool down before I can replace it." During the wait, Eddie fills Gump in on the last 3 years. Once the engine has cooled sufficiently, Eddie begins removing the cylinder head, asking Gump, "So, what have you been up to?" Gump explains, "Wrestling, and some school work here and there. I'm looking to go to graduate school, but, at my college, they don't offer a doctorate in gym." Eddie suggests, "Why don't you apply to the state university where we all go? They have a PhD program in exercise science." Gump replies, "That's a good idea. Maybe I'll do that. I kind of miss being so close to the beach. And I met up with Jan Lucida over the summer. We had a great summer together." Eddie replies, "Yeah. Jan Lucida. I remember her. She was on the swimming team, wasn't she?" Gump replies, "Yeah. She's into ocean swimming now and competes in triathlons." Eddie hands Gump his blown cylinder head gasket and, pointing to the defect, tells Gump, "Here's your problem, bro." Gump examines the gasket, clearly seeing the problem. Eddie and Gump talk while Eddie replaces the cylinder head gasket. Of all people, Jimmy O'Brien, driving his old AMC Gremlin, pulls up to the pumps and waits for Eddie to come out and wait on him. Seeing O'Brien, Eddie is in no rush to walk out to help him. O'Brien honks his horn a few times, strongly suggesting that Eddie come outside and fill his tank. Gump asks Eddie, "What's wrong with that guy?" Eddie replies, "That's Jimmy O'Brien. Remember him?" Remembering O'Brien from high school, Gump laughs and tells Eddie, "Say no more. That guy is a turd." Eddie walks out to the pumps with Gump, wondering why O'Brien is in such a tizzy. Walking up to O'Brien, who is impatiently sitting in his car, Eddie asks, "Fill it up." O'Brien yells back, "Yeah. I'm late for work. Can you make it quick?" Eddie replies, "Sure, Junior. No problem." O'Brien, who is in a crappy mood, yells back to Eddie, "I'm not a junior." Eddie ignores O'Brien's comeback and continues to talk with Gump, which irritates O'Brien even more. As he is filling O'Brien's tank, Eddie tells Gump, "O'Brien's father, the social studies teacher, was also involved in the gambling ring. Mr. O'Brien was failing athletes so they couldn't compete in important meets." Through the car window, O'Brien exclaims, "He was not." Eddie asks O'Brien, "Then, where did your Mercedes go, Junior? And where did your father's Mercedes go? And why did your dad sell his big house and move to 4th Street?" Gump laughs, repeating, "4th Street. Those houses are worse than mobile homes." Eddie tells Gump, "Yeah, I know. Right? Mr. O'Brien lost all his gambling income, so he had to move to the bad side of the railroad tracks." O'Brien exclaims, "That's not the reason." Eddie continues to ignore O'Brien for the moment. O'Brien is now ready to blow a gasket. Eddie collects the money from O'Brien and is slow to count out O'Brien's change. O'Brien exclaims, "Can you hurry up and give me my change? I'm going to be late." Eddie tells O'Brien, "I thought you said you're a hotshot manager. What's the big deal?" Eddie then turns to Gump and tells him, "O'Brien, here, always drives up to the pumps and likes it when I pump his gas and clean his filthy windshield. It makes him feel strong and powerful when he tells me what to do. O'Brien, who thinks Eddie is nothing more than a dumb mechanic, is flabbergasted that Eddie is astute enough to have him figured out. Eddie hands O'Brien his change and tells him, "Have a nice day, Junior." O'Brien drives off, leaving a small puddle of oil on the ground. Eddie and Gump head back inside, where Eddie finishes up the repair. Gump asks Eddie, "What's O'Brien's problem?" "That guy is seriously twisted." Eddie replies, "I don't know. I guess he was born that way." As Eddie checks the torque on the cylinder head bolts, Gump tells Eddie, "O'Brien should have just found something that he's good at rather than trying to do what everyone else is good at. I remember when he tried out for wrestling in middle school. He wanted to wrestle because he thought he'd get a girlfriend. He really embarrassed himself. Some guy a grade ahead of him pinned him in under 10 seconds. Eddie laughs and replies, "He was about as competent when he tried out for track." Eddie tells Gump, "Okay, bro. We're ready to crank it." Eddie turns the key, and the engine starts flawlessly. Best of all, there is no smoke coming out of the exhaust pipe. Eddie tells Gump, "It looks like you're back in business." Gump replies, "Great. Now I can get back on the road." Gump pays his bill, which Eddie discounted. Gump thanks Eddie and heads back to college. Eddie gets back to work, glad to hear Gump is doing well. The second day of track practice, as promised, brings instruction in the relay handoff and a relay drill. The athletes gather on the bleachers, awaiting the arrival of the coaches. Sitting together, the tribe discusses what they have been up to over the summer. At the other end of the bleachers, the freshmen congregate together, trying to figure out what today will bring. Mr. Fraser, Provost Layton, Kathy, and Paula walk in, and the athletes quiet down as everyone is eager to hear today's announcements and agenda. Mr. Fraser announces, "Good morning. Today, we are going to learn how to properly execute the relay handoff technique that we, as a team, will be using. Kathy and Paula will be demonstrating the technique to you, and I will be describing exactly what is happening during the handoff. But first, I am going to demonstrate to you how a relay race is supposed to be run. Eddie, Mark, Braden, and Johnson, please come up here." The acclaimed 4x440-yard relay team steps onto the track, suspecting that, with the new metric standard, they will be running a 4x400-meter relay for the first time. Mr. Fraser tells the seasoned runners to warm up. As the guys are warming up, Kathy and Paula briefly demonstrate the non-visual non-verbal exchange using an up-sweep delivery so that those on the bench will be knowing what they will be seeing. Mr. Fraser describes what is happening as Kathy and Paula demonstrate the technique in slow motion. Fielding a few questions of the efficacy of the technique, Mrs. Owen steps up, presenting the data from last year's analysis of the non-visual non-verbal exchange compared with other techniques. The freshmen quickly realize that track and field at the university is far more advanced than it was in high school. But what they just heard is nothing compared to what they are about to see. Dr. Bonomo, who walked in a bit late, walks up to the lectern and tells the field athletes, "All of the field athletes look a little deficient in vitamin D. So, we're going to hold practice outside today. At 7 a.m., the sun is not high enough in the sky to facilitate vitamin D production. But Dr. Bonomo takes every chance he gets to hold practice outside." The field athletes head outside, where they will be demonstrating their skill in all field events, not just the indoor events. Within a week, the track athletes will be also practicing outside, weather permitting. Mr. Fraser tosses the baton to Mark, telling the relay team, "You'll be running a 4x400-meter relay. Run in any order you want." Mr. Fraser then tells the team, "Notice I told them they can run in any order they want. That is usually not the case. But this relay team has been running together for 9 years. They've never lost a race. Did you hear that? They have never lost a race. As Mr. Fraser is addressing his team, Kathy whispers to the relay team, "The world record in the 4x400 is something like 256.2. After yesterday's 400-meter competition, you guys are really close." Mr. Fraser blows his whistle, and Mark gets on the track. Braden exclaims, "We need some asses to kick." Looking through yesterday's performance statistics for the top runners, Mr. Fraser announces, "Hill, Mitchell, John, and Hoffer, warm up. And you will run in that order." Mr. Fraser clearly sees Braden's point. Having competition on the track will result in a better performance. And Mr. Fraser is quite curious to see what the guys can deliver this year. With everyone warmed up and ready to go, the starter announces, "On your marks." The arena goes silent as the starter announces, "Set." The buzzer sounds, and Mark leaves the blocks, out to make Hill look like he is still in high school. Mr. Fraser announces, "Watch carefully when Mark hands off to Johnson. And then watch when Hill hands off to Mitchell." Mr. Fraser obviously knows that Mark will win this heat. In about 45 seconds, Mark hands off to Johnson, which goes seamlessly. Hill then hands off to Mitchell 5 seconds later, which also goes well. During the second lap, Mr. Fraser announces, "During the handoff, there was no break in the cadence of either runner. And very little time was lost in the transition. That is what I expect to see." As the second leg approaches the transition zone, it is revealed that Johnson gained some ground over Mitchell. Johnson hands off to Eddie, and Mitchell hands off to John. Now brother against brother, Eddie is out to make John look bad, just for the fun of it. Looking at his stopwatch, Mr. Fraser exclaims, "Did you see that? These guys are clocking." The freshmen are astounded at the skill level being demonstrated on the track. Truth be told, some of them are very worried. But what the freshmen are not aware of is that they are watching a world-class performance. Eddie, gaining ground over John, hands off to Braden. Hoffer receives the baton from John, hoping not to lose too much ground. During the anchor leg, Provost Layton, looking at her stopwatches, tells Mr. Fraser, "These guys are definitely ready. And if I am not mistaken, Braden is having a much better run today than he did yesterday." Mr. Fraser laughs and replies, "That's because Eddie beat him yesterday. That's the best thing that could have ever happened to Braden." Provost Layton recalls and mentions, "The missing link, George. Training the mind." Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton both smile, both knowing that, if Eddie had not beat Braden yesterday, Braden would not be at his best today. Not relenting in the least at the end of his leg, Braden approaches and crosses the finish line. 18 seconds later, Hoffer crosses the finish line with a performance that would have won the gold medal at last year's divisional meet if Eddie, Mark, Johnson, and Braden were not around. Immediately looking up at the electronic timer, Braden sees his relay team's time, which is 2:59.12. Mr. Fraser, ecstatic at the time, exclaims, "Did everyone see that? These guys were clocking. These guys broke 3 minutes. Can you believe it?" Braden heads over to the rest of his relay team, where they all exchange high fives. Once he is calmed down, Mr. Fraser asks Kathy, "What's the world record?" Kathy replies, "About 256.2. Mr. Fraser exclaims, "These guys are 3 seconds off the world record. Can you believe it?" And the reason these guys are so fast is because the clock is their main competitor. They are always out to beat their last performance. Mr. Fraser would be correct. When Eddie, Mark, Braden, and Johnson are on the track, they always give it 100% and do not slack off because they are running a time trial. The same can be said of Barbara, Kathy, Paula, Erica, Tessa, and anyone else who trained under Mr. Fraser. And learning from Eddie and Kathy, Karen is now displaying the same characteristic. Now that the athletes are aware of what is expected, Kathy and Paula demonstrate and explain the handoff technique to the team one more time, this time in detail. During the demonstration, Provost Layton tells Mr. Fraser, "I can't wait to see what the women can do. At the end of last year, they all have improved dramatically. And this year, they are all faster." Mr. Fraser replies, "Go for it. After Kathy and Paula are done, call them up and see what they can do." Provost Layton looks through yesterday's performance statistics, quickly putting together a relay team suggestive of this year's potential assignments. Calling Karen, Erica, Tessa, and Amanda aside, Provost Layton tells them, "You guys will be running a 4x400-meter relay after Kathy and Paula are finished. Go ahead and warm up. And this race is not for fun. We need to see what you guys can do." The women immediately get the message that Provost Layton is serious. Provost Layton then calls Stone, McCutcheon, Mitchell, and Delaney aside, telling them, "We need better times on your top end, so you will be running in this heat. I don't want any slacking off. And please do not let the women beat you. Okay, get warmed up." Mitchell, a distance runner who excels at the 400-meter dash, is not worried. Once Kathy and Paula finish their instruction, Provost Layton announces, "Before we begin our drill, Karen, Erica, Tessa, and Amanda will be running a 4x400-meter relay. Joining them on the track will be Stone, McCutcheon, Mitchell, and Delaney. And you will be running in the order I announced." Already been beaten by Karen, Erica and Tessa have something to prove. And Amanda, coming in fourth place during yesterday's 400-meter time trials, does not want to be seen as the weak link. It's not hard to figure out that the coaching staff is trying out potential combinations for this year's relay teams. The women get on the track, fired up and ready to prove themselves. Joining them on the track is a relay team of two highly skilled men and two relatively unskilled men, all of who will hopefully entice the women into running a faster race. Looking over the competition, the women realize they have a very good chance of beating the guys, which was Provost Layton's intent. Right before Karen gets onto the track, there is a lot of whispering going on among the women in this race. There is also a lot of pointing at the guys by the women, making the guys wonder what the women are talking about. The women exchange high fives as Karen gets on the track. With the lead-off runners behind the blocks, the athletes on the bleachers are paying close attention. The starter gets the runners set, and the buzzer sounds. With the race now underway, Mr. Fraser smiles and tells Provost Layton, "I think I see what you're doing here." Provost Layton smiles and replies, "Tell me, George. What do you think I am up to?" George explains, "You have Karen, the fastest woman on the team, chasing down Stone. Then, during her leg, Erica will take the lead since she'll be up against Jeff McCutcheon. And Tessa is going to do everything she can to not let Mitchell catch her. For the final leg, it's no secret that Amanda will not let Delaney beat her. From what I gather from the team, Amanda despises Delaney." Provost Layton replies, "That's my plan. And, according to yesterday's data, the women have a slight advantage." Mr. Fraser looks over yesterday's performance statistics, realizing that the women might just take this race. Stone hands off to McCutcheon and, a few seconds later, Karen hands off to Erica. As Erica erodes away at McCutcheon's lead, Provost Layton tells Mr. Fraser, "I'm thinking that Erica will be in the lead after this leg." Jeff McCutcheon had the slowest time yesterday during the time trials. Mr. Fraser whispers to Coach Layton, "I think we're going to have to cut him. But he's supposedly a distance guy. We'll see what he has tomorrow." At the end of her leg, Erica hands Tessa a significant lead. McCutcheon, not very skilled at handing off the baton, slows down at the transition zone, bungling the handoff, giving Mitchell much more work to do than originally expected. Back on the bleachers, Eddie comments, "It must be genetic. That new McCutcheon guy messed up the handoff." Mark tells Eddie, "We can't call him McCutcheon. That name is already taken." Braden pipes up and offers, "How about we call him McCutcheon?" Mark replies, yeah. McCrutchen, McClutching, and McCrotchen. Then, we can keep them all straight. Eddie replies, I don't know, bro. They all look like a McCrutchen to me. Mark agrees, telling everyone, yeah, all of them look like an old Rock'em Sock'em robot. It is decided by the tribe, at least for now, that all McCrutchens will be called McCrutchen. Tess approaches the transition zone first, handing off to Amanda. Mitchell arrives shortly afterward and hands off to Delaney. After the first lap of the final leg, it is clear that Amanda is increasing her lead over Delaney. The athletes on the bleachers, knowing that the women are having a great run, begin to cheer for Amanda. Amanda crosses the finish line with a time of 3:36.43, which is about 13 seconds shy of the women's world record. Mr. Fraser exclaims, I can't believe it. These women are fast. They were clocking. With all the excitement over the women, no one really notices that Delaney crossed the finish line with a time of 3:44.94. The women exchange high fives and head back to the bleachers, receiving a high five from everyone they pass. Very excited at the women's performance, Provost Layton announces, well, that was certainly very enlightening. Turning to the women who just won, Provost Layton tells them, that was a great run. Congratulations to every one of you. Hearing Provost Layton's words of encouragement, the athletes on the bleachers cheer for the women. Now focusing on the team, Provost Layton announces, we're all going to run the relay drill now. We will start with the women in lane 1 and the men in lane 2. And please, let's try not to have a collision on the track. Some of the athletes laugh, remembering a few violent collisions on the track from last year. Ready to perfect their skill in the non-visual non-verbal technique, the team gets onto the track. Using two batons, the drill moves along quickly, with the runners receiving the baton, sprinting for 100 meters, and handing off to the next runner. As Mr. Fraser, Provost Layton, Kathy, and Paula observe the handoffs, they are looking for a smooth transition. Any slowing of the runner's pace or break in cadence is indicative of a bad handoff. Some of the freshmen clearly need help with the technique. When the coaching staff sees an athlete who can use some extra help, they are pulled aside, and one of the coaches provides individual instruction. A few minutes into the drill, as the runners are lined up on both sides of the track, as fate would have it, Braden is about to hand off to Delaney. Mark whispers to Eddie, here it comes. Captain Dyslexic just got on the track. Eddie quickly realizes to what Mark is referring and alerts Johnson of who is coming around the curve. Delaney, seeing who is approaching, is very apprehensive. And, justifiably so. Braden clearly wants Delaney off the team. Braden approaches the transition zone at full speed with the baton in his right hand. Delaney takes off, with his right hand behind him, expecting to receive the baton in his hand. Instead, Braden throws the baton at Delaney, hitting him in his head. Delaney stops and leaves the track, wondering what in the world just happened. Mr. Fraser blows his whistle, stopping the drill. Approaching Delaney, Braden exclaims, "What's the matter with your ass? You were supposed to have your left hand out. You're just lucky I didn't put that baton right where I was supposed to. If I have the baton in my right hand, you're supposed to grab it with your left. What is so hard about that? Next time, I'm gonna shove that baton right where I was supposed to." Delaney yells back, "You didn't have to throw it at me." Braden exclaims, "Yes, I did. How else is your ass gonna learn? And there ain't nobody else who's gonna make that mistake again today. Your ass must have been taking too much of that psycho tubin. Now, get your fat ass back in line and get it right this time." Braden picks up the baton and heads back to the transition zone. The drill is restarted, with some of the freshmen now wondering what's up with Braden and Delaney. So does Mr. Fraser, who gets the rundown from Paula on what transpired over the summer when McCutcheon and Delaney planted marijuana in a few of the athletes' June buggies. And on the other side of the track, Provost Layton gets Kathy's version of what transpired last summer with McCutcheon and Delaney. The rest of the morning goes well, with no more confrontations between the athletes. After practice, the team takes a seat on the bleachers. Mr. Fraser goes over a few details and makes a few announcements, followed by an announcement that Provost Layton would like to see Amber and Karen for a moment after practice. The team hits the lockers as Amber and Karen meet with Provost Layton. Amber and Karen follow Provost Layton and Kathy into the nicely appointed office reserved for the officials during a meet, both wondering what the meeting is all about. Provost Layton opens by telling Amber and Karen, "First, I'd like to say that both of you have turned in quite impressive performances today. Both of you have obviously been working hard over the summer." Almost in unison, Amber and Karen reply, "Thank you," still wondering why they have been called aside. Provost Layton smiles and mentions, "And I might add, both of you looked pretty good out there during the relay drill." Getting down to business, Provost Layton tells Amber and Karen, "I'm sure that, by now, both of you know that Kathy, Paula, Eddie, and Mark each held a position as an intern, working with their high school track team. With Kathy and Paula having graduated, they are now working with our university's team. Eddie and Mark have chosen to not return to their positions at the high school this year." Amber and Karen wonder why Provost Layton is sharing this information with them. Provost Layton continues, "The university would like to extend an offer to each of you for the positions vacated by Eddie and Mark." Expecting Provost Layton to tell them little more than their performance is great so far this year, Amber and Karen look at each other, wondering what Provost Layton will say next. Provost Layton explains, "The position involves coaching the Northside High School team for roughly 2 hours a day. The position also requires that you be present at the high school track meets, so long as they do not interfere with the university's meets." Amber and Karen, expecting the position to pay little more than the minimum wage, are quite surprised when Provost Layton announces, "The position pays $45 an hour, which is considered scholarship money, for roughly 12 hours a week work. And you will also receive class credit for helping to coach the team." To Karen and Amber, Provost Layton's deal sounds like a dream come true. Amber and Karen are speechless. Breaking the silence, Karen tells Provost Layton, "Wow. I'd really love to do that. Thank you so much." Also accepting Provost Layton's offer, Amber replies, "Me too. Thank you so much. I really appreciate this." Provost Layton tells Amber and Karen, "I've asked Kathy to be present today should you have any questions about the position. But I'm taking it that both of you are accepting the university's offer." Both Amber and Karen exclaim, "Yes." Provost Layton tells Amber and Karen, "Okay, then. I'll take care of all the paperwork, and Kathy will answer any questions that you may have. And the university prefers that you please keep the details of your compensation strictly confidential. It's not every day the university makes such an offer to our athletes." Provost Layton then heads to her office. Amber and Karen hang around for a while with a few questions for Kathy. Once Provost Layton has left, Karen wastes no time asking Kathy, "How come she picked us?" Kathy explains, "For one, you guys are sophomores, so you'll be around for 3 years. And both of you guys are running times more like a senior than a sophomore. And you guys worked really well together at the summer day camp." Amber asks, "Why am I thinking you had something to do with this?" Kathy smiles and replies, "Maybe it's because I did. So did Paula and Mr. Fraser." Kathy explains a few details about the position to Amber and Karen, then Kathy heads out for the day. Amber and Karen head to the locker room, quietly discussing Provost Layton's offer between themselves. On the third day of practice, the team meets in the arena. After getting a few administrative details out of the way, Mr. Fraser announces, "Today, Everyone will be running a mile for time. Oops. I haven't gotten used to the metric system yet. Well, you know what? Forget about the 1,500-meter run. Today, all of you will be running a mile for time. Then, we will run the interval drill and work outside on the sand track. And, as usual, the field athletes will be working outside today with Dr. Bonomo. The team heads out to the track, knowing that the last 2 days of vacation are now over. Out at the track, Mr. Fraser reviews his roster and announces in the first heat, I want Mitchell, Akinmola, Stone, Braden, Eddie, Mark, Johnson, John, Davidson, and McCutcheon. Get warmed up, and we'll start in a few minutes. Mr. Fraser then raises his voice and exclaims, and I don't want anyone slacking off. The group warms up, knowing that this race will be a serious fight to the finish. As they are warming up, Eddie tells Mark, I guess we can't pull that crap we did with Mahoney when we were in high school. Mark laughs and replies, that was seriously funny. I totally forgot about that. When they were freshmen in high school, Eddie, Mark, Braden, and Johnson purposely ran a slow 880-yard run, letting Paul Mahoney win. Mahoney, who hated the 880-yard run, ended up with the best time of the day and got stuck running that event, an event that he totally despised. Eddie asks Mark, so, this new McCrutcheon is supposedly a distance guy. Mark replies, yeah, right. We'll see about that. Eddie laughs, knowing that McCutcheon is likely coming in last place in this race. The runners, all fired up, line up, and are ready to go. The starter announces, set. Interested to see how Daryl does this year, Provost Layton has her own stopwatches out, ready to time each of his laps. This year, Mitchell and Akinmola do not care about Stone, for he has graduated. Stone is just working out with the team, training for the Olympics. The gun is fired, and the runners quickly leave the starting line, fighting for a position where they feel comfortable. Stone immediately takes the lead, and, slipping in front of Akinmola, Mitchell moves into position to draft off of Stone. Not wanting to fall too far behind, Akinmola drops in behind Mitchell. Braden will have nothing to do with the cat and mouse strategy of the season distance runners, and passes Stone on the back straight away. Right up there with Braden is Eddie, who is not about to let Braden steal today's show. After the first quarter mile, Braden is in the lead, followed closely by Eddie. A few yards back are Stone, Mitchell, and Akinmola, running their usual race. Mark, Johnson, John, and Davidson are bunched up a few yards behind Akinmola, with Jeff McCutcheon trailing far behind the pack. As the second lap is underway, Mr. Fraser studies how the runners are running. A bit reserved during the second lap, Mr. Fraser calmly tells Provost Layton, I think we're on track to have 5 runners break 4 minutes. Provost Layton adds, I wouldn't count Mark and Eric out just yet. They just broke from the pack and are chasing down Akinmola. As they approach the end of the second quarter mile, suggesting that the runners are not running fast enough, Mr. Fraser yells out, move it. Move it. Show me something. During the third lap, the runners maintain position, waiting for someone to make a move. Mr. Fraser asks Kathy, when did Eddie start running distance? Kathy explains, he changed how he trains, but he hasn't been running distance. Mr. Fraser replies, I definitely want to hear more about this later. At the end of the third lap, Stone starts chasing down Braden and Eddie. And, referring to the 5 front runners, Mr. Fraser exclaims, they are all going to break 4 minutes. On the fourth and last lap, Mitchell passes Stone, moving into third place. Stone and Akinmola step up their pace, chasing down Mitchell. On the back straightaway, Eddie passes Braden. Braden drafts off of Eddie, hearing the footsteps of Mitchell closing in behind him. Coming around the final curve, Braden attempts to pass Eddie, but Eddie steps up the pace. Right behind Braden, Mitchell gives it all he has. At the finish, Eddie crosses first, followed by Braden. Fighting it out for third place, Mitchell edges out Stone by one well-fought for yard. Finishing in fifth place, a position in which he is very unfamiliar, is Akinmola. Johnson takes sixth place, followed by Mark, Davidson, then John. Just starting his fourth lap is McCutcheon, who apparently does not matter in this race. Quite impatient, Mr. Fraser exclaims, "What's on the clock? These guys were clocking. What do we got?" Knowing that Mr. Fraser cannot wait, Mrs. Owens begins recording the times from the timekeepers as quickly as she can, which takes a few minutes. McCutcheon finally crosses the finish line, and his time is added to the run sheet. Mrs. Owens hands the run sheet to Mr. Fraser, who quickly looks over the runners' times. Mr. Fraser hands the sheet to Kathy, telling her, "Please announce these." Kathy announces to the team, "Eddie, 353.8. Braden, 354.4. Mitchell, 354.6. Stone, 354.7. Akinmola, 355.7. Johnson, 358.4. Mark, 359.8. Davidson, 412.3. John, 420.4. And McCrutchen, 523.3. The team claps and cheers, knowing exactly what they have all witnessed. Kathy gives Eddie a big hug and a kiss, knowing that his training has paid off. Paula gives Mark a hug and a kiss, never expecting him to break a 4-minute mile. And Mr. Fraser cannot believe that he has 7 runners on his team who can break a 4-minute mile. Most universities would be ecstatic to have one runner able to break 4 minutes. Eddie takes a seat on the bench, watching what goes on as the other heats get started. Eddie sees another group of runners rounding the track as Kathy and Paula arrange the upcoming heats. 8 timekeepers record every last statistic of the runners, as Mrs. Owens documents the times. Mr. Fraser looks over the field of runners he has to work with this year, wondering where all the superior talent came from. And, as all that is going on, Eddie sees that a sophomore transfer student, Dagmar Kramer, who moved from Germany to attend the university, unexpectedly beats Amber with a time of 440.3 in the 1-mile run. Once the time trials are over, the athletes begin dragging the training sled on the sand track and running the interval training drill. Kathy and Paula work out with the team, pushing the athletes hard. Not too concerned with evaluating everyone's performance in the first week, Mr. Fraser plans to mix training in with time trials as the semester progresses. While the athletes are training, Provost Layton tells Mr. Fraser, "In all of my life, George, I have never imagined that I would see what I did today." Mr. Fraser replies, "I don't know what I'm going to do, Athena. These guys came back stronger and faster this year than when they left in the spring. I'm not sure there's too much more that I can do for them. I've taught them almost everything I know." Provost Layton reminds Mr. Fraser, "Last year, at the end of the season, you told the team that, next year, if you want to be equally as successful as this year, you will have to raise the bar again. They heard you, George." Mr. Fraser tells Provost Layton, "Kathy mentioned that Eddie changed his workouts. I need to ask him what he changed. Whatever it is, it worked for Karen too. And Dagmar, the girl from Germany, is a lot faster than the statistics we had on her when we accepted her." Provost Layton, who has been studying the team statistics, informs Mr. Fraser, "From what I've seen so far, I really feel that the team will take all the gold medals again in the divisional meet." Mr. Fraser replies, "That reminds me. I need to have Akinmola practice his high jump with the field group occasionally." Mr. Fraser asks Provost Layton, "By the way, do you know what happens at this annual coaches meeting that we're attending later today?" Provost Layton replies, "I can't say that I do, George. Last year, Dr. Karakova, Dr. Braun, and Dr. Paxton attended that meeting." Mr. Fraser comments, "At least we'll be getting a free lunch out of it." Provost Layton tells Mr. Fraser, I suspect that whatever is covered, it could be done in 30 minutes. But we'll find out. Practice comes to an end, and the team heads to the lockers. After today's practice, the team's energy level is enormous. On the way to the locker room, Braden exclaims, "We're gonna have a kicker season. They are all going down. Ain't no one stopping us this year." The tribe all exchange high fives with each other and all those around. The energy is contagious in a way, with many of the team members sharing the tribe's unequaled enthusiasm. The last to walk into the men's locker room is Braden, who is still fired up. Braden exclaims, "Those other teams don't stand a chance. We're kicking everyone's ass this year." Braden walks by Eddie, who gives Braden another high five. McCutcheon, desperately wanting to be part of the team, raises his hand, trying to give Braden a high five. Braden sternly looks at McCutcheon, exclaiming, "What's your lazy ass want a high five for? I thought you said you ran distance. You ain't done shit today." As he is headed to the shower, Eddie raises his voice, yelling back to Braden, "He does run distance. He runs just about as fast as we did when we were in elementary school." Most of the athletes in the locker room laugh, with the freshmen beginning to figure out the team's complex and interesting dynamics. The verbal confrontation does not end there. Braden tells McCutcheon, "Turn your flimsy ass around so I can boot it out of here." Trying to act tough, McCutcheon tells Braden, "Shut your ass." Braden laughs, yelling at McCutcheon, "Why don't you just clean out your locker and go home? You ain't making this team anyway." Mark walks by and tells McCutcheon, "Yeah, Junior. We win. You lose. Do you see the problem here?" Everyone within earshot of Mark laughs, with the freshman wondering what's up with McCutcheon. Clearly, with less of a chance of winning this confrontation than winning the mile earlier today, McCutcheon wisely backs down. And Mark won again. While McCutcheon was in a verbal pissing match with Braden, Mark switched McCutcheon's bottle of shampoo with a special mixture he made yesterday. Like his brother Todd, Jeff McCutcheon will be bald within a week or two. Later that morning, Mr. Fraser, Provost Layton, and Dr. Karakova attend the annual divisional meeting of track coaches. During the annual meeting, the topics of discussion are the order of events at the meets, any proposed rule changes, setting the meet dates for the following academic year, and any other issues that may be of concern to the teams in the division. Dr. Karakova, who is the regional track and field rules expert, attends the meeting every year. Dr. Gregory, the chairman of the meeting, calls the meeting to order. Going around the room, Dr. Gregory introduces today's guests, a rather pointless activity since most of the coaches already know each other. And, for those who have not met, informal introductions were made before the meeting began. Coming to the university's table, Dr. Gregory announces, "This year, we have Mr. George Fraser joining us who, from what I hear, has moved up to our level from teaching gym class at Northside High School, placing great emphasis on the word Mr." Dr. Gregory condescendingly asks Mr. Fraser, "How's the team doing without Dr. Braun? Do you think you'll win anything this year?" Mr. Fraser confidently replies, "Yes. I plan to take home all of the gold medals again during the upcoming divisional meet." Apparently, Dr. Gregory quickly forgot about the results of last spring's divisional meet. Dr. Gregory laughs and sarcastically asks, "How about the silver and bronze medals, coach?" In a serious tone, Mr. Fraser replies, "Only one person wins the race. The silver and bronze medals count for nothing." Many in attendance laugh, belittling Mr. Fraser's remarks, believing that he is a very inexperienced coach. Addressing Provost Layton, Dr. Gregory comments, "Dr. Layton, I see you're in attendance today. Are you here in an administrative role?" Provost Layton replies, "No, sir. I am now the assistant track coach of our university's team." Dr. Gregory then announces to the group, "I'd like to introduce Provost Athena Layton, who will apparently be joining Mr. George Fraser this year, this time with only a slight emphasis on the word Mr. Dr. Gregory then makes the highly sarcastic remark, "I'm guessing that your university hasn't found a suitable replacement for Dr. Braun yet, Provost." Provost Layton replies, "As George hinted at a moment ago, we're looking forward to a winning season." Although she is good at hiding her emotions, Provost Layton is livid having heard Dr. Gregory's treatment of herself and Mr. Fraser. Dr. Gregory, coming to Dr. Karakova, announces, "And I'm sure you all know Dr. Alexander Karakova, who is our regional rules expert." Dr. Karakova waves to the group and receives the expected applause. Although he remains quiet, Dr. Karakova would like to admonish Dr. Gregory for his condescending attitude toward Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton. But Dr. Karakova has inside information that Dr. Gregory and his team will be admonished on the track in a few months. The morning session of the meeting is rather boring, as the committee plans the meet dates for the following academic year. As in every year, the order of the meets remains the same, but the dates are adjusted so that the meet dates land on the weekends whenever possible. Casual observance would suggest that a secretary could perform this menial task, but Dr. Gregory apparently likes to run the show. Over lunch, Dr. Karakova comments to Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton, "I have to apologize for Dr. Gregory's behavior in there. I honestly don't know what his problem is this year." Provost Layton responds, "I've known Pete Gregory since my college days. He hasn't changed one bit. He's still as sarcastic and demeaning as ever." Mr. Fraser replies, "As Gerhard always says, we'll just settle our differences on the track. Then, we'll hear what he has to say." Dr. Karakova confidently informs Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton, "If the last few years are any indication, Dr. Gregory's team is not likely to have a strong showing this year." After lunch, the meeting continues for another 2 long hours, which Mr. Fraser concludes is equally as boring as the first 2 hours. Mr. Fraser, Provost Layton, and Dr. Karakova, at least, got a good lunch out of the deal. And Mr. Fraser got a chance to observe and understand the dynamics between the other coaches who he will be up against come the track season. The weekend arrives, and Kathy wants to go rock hunting. Inviting Paula and Mark, Kathy is in search of more blue and yellow stones, and perhaps stones of different colors, if they even exist. Once they are all together, they drive to the middle school in Paula's Jeep. Sliding through the opening in the fence near the maintenance building, the group heads to the rocky outcropping where Kathy and Eddie earlier found several blue and yellow stones. On their walk, Mark asks, "What exactly are we looking for?" Kathy replies, "Blue and yellow stones, kind of like the one I'm wearing." Paula tells Mark, "They have superpowers." Mark replies, "Yeah. I remember you telling me that." Arriving at the rocky outcropping, Kathy, Eddie, Paula, and Mark carefully look around for prized blue and yellow stones. Various types and sizes of stones are scattered all over the area, as if a stonemason once used the area as a dumping ground. Eddie finds another yellow stone and yells out to Kathy, "I found another yellow one." Kathy rushes over to see exactly what Eddie found. Kathy shows Mark and Paula the stone, telling Mark, "This is what we're looking for." Mark, not well versed in parallel universes as are Kathy and Paula, takes a look at the stone and asks, "So, this stone can bring us to a parallel universe?" Kathy explains, "Yeah. We live in the yellow universe. You need a blue stone to go to the parallel universe that me and Paula went to." Looking around, Mark mentions, "We should get a front-end loader and dig this place up." Eddie laughs and tells Mark, "That's what I said last summer when me and Kathy were looking for stones." Paula tells Mark, "I'd love to hear you explain why you're digging this area up with a front-end loader if we get caught." Mark would undoubtedly have an interesting explanation for the officials should they show up during the excavation. Under some gravel, Kathy finds another blue stone near where she found the large blue stone last summer. Mark and Paula come over and start searching in that area. Finding a few more blue and yellow stones, Kathy yells out to Eddie, "Hey, Eddie, I found a bunch of them." Eddie comes over to take a look and shows the stones he just found to the group. Kathy exclaims, "Wow, these are red. They are so beautiful." Eddie tells Kathy there's probably a bunch more there too. Everyone heads over to Eddie's newly found redstone mine, where there is also a generous supply of blue and yellow stones. While they are all searching the area, Kathy mentions, "Now I'm wondering that, if the red stones have superpowers too, if there is a red universe." Paula, having entered the blue parallel universe with Kathy, replies, "Seriously, girl. If there is one, I wonder where we live in the red universe." Kathy smiles and replies, "On 2nd Street." Paula quickly replies, "Not. Stop that, girl." Eddie chimes in, "Hey. 2nd Street isn't so bad now." Paula tells Eddie, "Yeah, in our universe. In the blue universe, Mr. Crumb still lives on 2nd Street." The afternoon yields 6 yellow stones, 6 blue stones, and 9 red stones. All of the red stones were found in the same location, making everyone wonder whether there are more stones of different colors. Eddie was convinced that there was a large red stone in the area, but was unsuccessful at finding it. Everyone heads back to Paula's Jeep, wondering how many more stones they've left at the rocky outcrop. When they arrive back at Eddie and Kathy's house, they divide the stones among themselves. Kathy mentions that she is going to head back to the jeweler and have settings made for the yellow and red stones, matching the one she had made for her blue stone. Paula is very curious whether there is a red universe, and if so, what is different about it. But, since the weather is beautiful outside, for the rest of the afternoon, Mark and Paula join Eddie and Kathy in their pool.